Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus took Peter and James and his brother John, and he led them up a high mountain by themselves. He was transfigured before their eyes, and his face became as dazzling as the sun, his clothes as radiant as light. Suddenly, Moses and Elijah appeared to him, conversing with him. Upon this, Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, how good it is for us to be here. With your permission, I will erect three booths here, one for Moses, one for Elijah, and one for you." He was still speaking when suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and out of the cloud came a voice which said, "This is my beloved Son. My favor rests on him. Listen to him." When they heard this, the disciples fell forward on the ground, overcome with fear. And Jesus came toward them and, laying his hand on them, said, "Get up, do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they did not see anyone but Jesus. As they were coming down the mountainside, Jesus commanded them, "Do not tell anyone of this vision until the Son of Man rises from the dead." The Gospel of the Lord. So many of you at Matthew Kelly yesterday, yes? Very good, absolutely. It was an excellent afternoon and presentation. Wonderful how he could keep speaking and keep people's attention for an hour and 15 minutes and then start over and do the same again. Quite something. Hard to hold that focus, but he had a great message that we as Catholics have a pretty powerful tradition and a history, and that we've got a great story. We don't always proclaim it well or celebrate it well, but we have an extraordinary story. And it's about the way we journey with that story. Today in the readings, theme of journeying is very important. A journey is a great metaphor for how we make our way through life, yes? Really, it's a good example. But when we look at a journey, we don't want to think of it just as a pure linear traveling, because it ain't going to work out that way, right? We know full well it ain't going to work that way. Interesting, in my new car, I have an item, the navigation system, and once you get going on the road, you can't be punching in. Isn't that something? They knew about that, right? I tried it a few times when I was traveling, and it doesn't work too well when you have to take your focus off of where it is you are going and start punching it in. And what they are doing is very simple. It's a safety mechanism. It's good to know where you're going. That's what they are saying. It's good to know ahead of time where you are going. Punch it in, and it won't always take you there, perhaps, because they don't know about new paths and new roads and new directions. But it is a very helpful tool. It's a kind of a homing tool to help you realize where you are at. It's a valuable piece. Every stage of the road is different. And as they make new roads, sometimes they are not in there. But even with the very best of faith in the world, we still may end up on dark roads, and we may wind up in places that we never imagined or dreamed of. It's one of the great truths of our journey in the Christian life. We don't always have the power and the control over it. To have faith does not mean that we have all the answers. To have faith means simply that we have bearings. We have a homing instinct within us. That is a relationship with him. It's very much like some of those things that they build into the automobiles now. You can check in and say, "Hey, I need to get on home." We have that relationship with him as we journey. We have bearings because we know who is the one that guides us. There will be times in each of our lives when we will have to go forward armed only with courage and faith. How are we going to navigate our way through this experience? How are we going to get there? And it's only through faith and courage that we can journey forward. The truth is that we are all involved in a journey. In fact, we're not involved in just one journey, but two journeys. We're involved in the journey in the exterior world, trying to find our place in the world, trying to find what it is I am going to do, what my vocation is going to be in the world. Each of us has a vocation in building his kingdom, but then we have an avocation as well, whatever work we do, that helps us through in navigating this experience of life. Finding what God has in mind for me can certainly be intensely graceful and beneficial in my journey. Look at people who have really found what it is they feel God is leading to them to in terms of their work or their avocation, and you will find happy people. People who are celebrating and aware of and grateful and in communion with God in the work that they are doing. And conversely, look at people who are not in communion with that, and you will find people who are stressed and have a lot of difficulty and a lot of issues regarding that. It's really a valuable piece. Being aware of what God has in mind for me. How many people in preparing themselves in going into the world, they consult with professors and they consult with counselors. How many people consult with God and say, God, what is it you would like me to be? What would you like me to accomplish in my life? It certainly makes a difference in the lives of people. And then we have the second journey, which is the journey within, knowing our own selves and then knowing him in whose likeness we are created. There is that special bond that exists in every single one of us. It's sort of like we're stamped with his DNA. That's why it's important to speak to him. That's why it's important to have the opportunity to see what it is that he might be guiding me to in terms of relationships, in terms of work, in terms of possibilities in my life. The search within, knowing that I am innately connected to him from the outset, created in his image and likeness, I carry a part of that reality in me. In the first reading and in the gospel reading, we have the experience of journeying. Abraham in the first reading, God calling him. And we say Abraham is our model of faith. He is our model of faith from the Old Testament experience. And some people say, no, he was the Jewish model of faith. No, he is our model of faith. Because the Christian faith does not exist in a vacuum. Christian faith exists only in the Judeo-Christian tradition. Jesus was a great Jew. We sometimes forget that. St. Paul was an excellent Jew and faithful to the Jewish traditions all of his life. And yet he is the most influential individual in the whole New Testament. 14 out of the 27 books in the New Testament attributed to him. We are a part of the Judeo-Christian tradition. In one of the Eucharistic prayers, we say, Abraham, our father in faith. Abraham was a great example, somebody called by God to follow him. Abraham was asked to leave behind his home, his family, his country, and to set out for a land that God had in mind for him. Not everybody is invited to that kind of a journey of faith in God. Not everybody is invited to leave their home and family. But everybody is invited to follow him, to hear him, to be responsive to him in the journey. To set out with him to journey to a particular place where he will show us many things. It's very easy for us to romanticize the journey of Abraham and say, well, God was telling him and prompting him. Well, it's exactly the same for you and I. He tells us and he guides us, But how do we hear him? In the midst of myriad voices, how do we hear him? How do I set aside? Do I set aside time for him so that I may hear him and how he is guiding me in this journey? God alone knows the difficulties that Abraham encountered on that journey. We have a very small window of experience of Abraham and growing his faith, what he had to go through in order to come into that kind of a trusting relationship with God. The only compass he had, the only navigation system he had, was faith in God. And he journeyed precisely on that. We also find that besides our faith, we get experiences sometimes in our faith. Experiences can be very valuable. Experiences of God's closeness, presence to us, they can be very inspiring. And we remember them all of our lives. We have a tendency to remember experiences always, good or bad. Personal experiences of events, they have a profound effect on us, much more than lectures or presentations or homilies. When you have a particular experience, it stands out in your life. And even though we may not be able to analyze all of those experiences, we know that they affect us and impact us for the rest of our lives. The experience on Mount Tabor was certainly significant for Jesus. It came at a particular point in his life where he had been teaching and instructing and healing and guiding and directing. And now he was resolutely turning toward Jerusalem, and he had no qualms or questions or doubts about what Jerusalem meant. He knew all of the prophets of the Old Testament, and he knew the violent death that many of them had met, and he knew full well that he was facing a violent death as well in Jerusalem. It was quite the event. Jesus took it on and welcomed it. He naturally recoiled some, knowing what was coming, as anybody else does. Somebody who is facing death because of cancer, because of a terminal illness. While they know and understand it deep within themselves, they certainly recoil from that reality as well. Jesus recoiled, and he goes up on the mountain. And there, with the friends that he has brought up, he goes into prayer, praying about the journey ahead. And while he's praying then, Moses and Elijah appear to him. That was particularly significant. That was bringing together all of the testaments, the old and the new. Elijah, the greatest prophet of the Old Testament, representing all of the prophets that had been and all of them who were persecuted and died. And then Moses, representing the law, the first five books of the Bible, all attributed to the authorship of Moses. And here was the law and the prophets, everything that was contained in the Old Testament experience, aligned with him and sharing with him about his imminent passion and death. All of the scriptures coming together in that event. All of the teaching of God's promise to Abraham now being fulfilled. And Jesus transfigured in their presence, so much so that they were shocked. It was a powerful experience for them. It was a powerful experience for Jesus. Because just as at his baptism, he heard the very same words, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." Do you hear those words? "This is my beloved Son." Every single one of us should hear those very same words. "You are my beloved Son. You are my beloved daughter." If we don't hear those words, then we gotta question ourselves and say, do we have a relationship with him? If you have a relationship with him, then you will hear those very same words in your communion with him. You are my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. Very powerful, powerful words. And for Jesus, it was a great confirmation and affirmation. It was a reassurance, and it strengthened him for that journey ahead. The great difficulties he would have to encounter, which he was keenly aware of. They're great words for somebody who is dealing with an imminent death. They were great words for Jesus to be confirmed in that faith. It wasn't that everything became rosy for him or took on a whole new coloring or experience. No, things didn't become rosy. Nothing had changed externally. But internally, he knew the presence of the Father. Father had confirmed his presence and his faithfulness to him. He still had to face the dark and threatening future. But he knew that somehow it was what God wanted of him, and God was going to provide him what he needed to complete that journey. What a powerful gospel in this Lenten season. How do we experience him? How do we experience him when he says, "You are my beloved son, you are my beloved daughter, in whom I am well pleased"? We have difficulty getting to there because we have such a tendency to see the fault, not the grace. The grace is our key to journeying ahead.